Episode 20. In this episode, we're using the feel, look, listen approach to getting an understanding how we can prevent conflicts from even occurring. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We are sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos successfully and remain steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Wincoller. Welcome to the show. There is nothing better to me than to spend time reading a book, and when I get to read that with friends, wow, that's really making my day. In this episode, we're going right into Chapter 2 of my book, Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management. And you could read along, listen, and get your own free copy. Just subscribe to leadingchaospodcast.com, and once done, you will then be sent a link to get your own free copy. I am on page 11 of the book, and the chapter begins with the title, To Prevent. On the top of the chapter, I have a quote from William Ellery Channing, and he was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. Channing states, "Difficulties are meant to rouse, not discourage. The human spirit is to grow strong by conflict." Channing's quote is all about finding the silver lining of conflict. Fear not conflict. Seek what it teaches us. And that's exactly what we're doing in this episode. We're talking about how to prevent a conflict from boiling over into a full-blown fisticuffs or verbal experience where people are saying things that they shouldn't really be saying and regretting it. What I've done in my course, the response curriculum, is that I've integrated my skills in medical emergencies with emotional emergencies. And there is a commonality on initial assessment. So for a medical emergency, when I became certified as an emergency medical technician, I was taught to look, listen, and feel whenever I came onto any given situation. So for instance, say you walk into a room, and this is one of the things we had to do when we were taking our practical to become certified as an EMT. You would go into a room and you'd see typically a ladder standing there and a person on the floor across the ways. And if you just went running up to that person without securing your own personal safety, you would probably get an X mark saying, you're not doing so well. The same is true for an emotional emergency. You would walk into that same room and say there's not a person laying on the floor, but two people fighting. What do you assess? What we do is we use the same properties of look, listen, and feel, and we switch it around and we say feel, look, and listen, starting with your intuitive sense. This is the most valuable thing that we could bring as humans to the equation. Listening to our gut. Following our intuition. You know, the animals during the tsunami in Indonesia were sensing that the wave was coming way before many of the humans. And the survivors talked about how the animals were going up to the higher terrain. They knew they had a sense of that. That is one's intuition. And we as humans have that too. So rely on that, believe in that, and trust it. We all know already that when a storm is coming, there's like a static electricity in the air, and you might feel, before you see anything, you feel the hairs on your arms rising a little bit, and there's like a pressure for me that I get. Sometimes I get a headache, and that's feeling something before it actually occurs. So I come into any given situation and I want to feel, what does my gut tell me? If I see two people that they might not be saying anything, but they might be just giving me a sense that, something's not right, I listen to that. That's my first key piece to assess. And then I will respond accordingly. But I don't want to just stop there. I also want to use the skill of just looking and watching. What's happening? So what do I look for? If two people are squared off, I'm looking for their posture. Are they standing with their arms crossed? Are their fists clenched? Are their eyes really looking directly? And what is their proximity? Are they standing too close? Are they turned away? There's so much that we take for granted, and if we don't notice it, we are really losing some valuable key indicators that tell us, warning, 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 something might happen. So we feel and we look, and the third part of this is that we listen. We listen for what is being said, and sometimes more importantly, what isn't being said. Parents know this really well. If you have kids and you have an upstairs and it's quiet upstairs and the kids aren't doing anything, that's probably a really good indicator that you might want to go upstairs and find out what's happening. But if we have parties who are, let's say, in a classroom and there's kids in the classroom, you want to be listening. What are they saying to each other? Are there jokes going back and forth that is at somebody's expense? Or is there a common laughter where no one is being picked on? So much is said, and words are so very powerful. So the first part of preventing is what we call the feel, look, listen approach. And this is a real basic step for anyone who wants to assess and be preventive and decide, do I want to take action before it becomes a full-blown out conflict? In medical emergencies of first responders, they feel for a pulse and a patient's breath. In an emotional emergency, the breath is also a really important indicator of distress and potential escalation. The thing is that way too often, the way in which a person in crisis is or isn't breathing is ignored because breath is so subtle. We take it for granted, but it tells us so much about that person's state of being. So that's also another key piece. We feel, look, and listen, and we also look at how a person is breathing. And you could see that through whether or not they're holding their breath. And that might be a sign of them clenching their fist. Maybe their nostrils are flared, and it will be a sign of that there might be an imminent attack of sorts. It could be verbal or physical. Or are they breathing too quickly, kind of like a pant, and getting not enough oxygen in their brain? And when a person isn't breathing well and not getting good quality oxygen, they can't think clearly. So breathing as an indicator is really important. And we'll be following up on breathing later on in this series as I go into my chapter, Don't Forget to Breathe. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about. So what happens? We have this skill on what indicators look for. We find the indicators by feeling, looking, listening, and listening for that breath, looking for the breath. But what happens, and we have to talk about this, when indicators are overlooked? Because that's really what allows a conflict to happen. And there's so many unfortunate, very, very unfortunate examples of this. And in my book, I have three different examples of this where there were really harsh tragedies that occurred. And yet we saw way ahead of time and could have intervened. And one of those happened in 2001, on March 6, 2001, the Santee school shooting. 15-year-old Andy Williams shot and killed two people and wounded 13 at his high school in Santee, California. A month prior to the shooting, Andy had been telling his friends that he was going to take his father's gun and bring it to school to shoot people. His friends said later that they thought he was joking and didn't take him seriously. Andy had been at the home of his best friend, Josh Stevens, on March 5th, just the day before. And Josh's mom's boyfriend, Chris Reynolds, asked Andy about the threats. Reynolds later stated that he had tried calling Andy's father to tell him about Andy's threat to take the weapon to school, but he failed to follow through after getting no answer on the Williams phone. So there we had some really obvious indicators of potential violence, and yet they got overlooked. That incident at Santee took place in 2001. Since that time, there's been way too many school shootings, and other worksite adventure shootings. In each of the cases, there are indicators, including the tragedy at Sandy Hook on December 14, 2012. Why do indicators get overlooked? Well, there's a lot of reasons. One is that we're human, and indicators are human behaviors. And whether it is that we don't have the training or we just aren't interested and we're overwhelmed. Odd comments, abrupt changes in behaviors, though, should not go unnoticed. Being alert and always on the lookout for danger is challenging, unless it's part of your job, like being a lifeguard or a patrolman who should be and is always constantly vigilant and on the lookout for warning indicators. Still, some signs will slip through the cracks. Then again, even when a potentially dangerous indicators are noticed, some people do not always know what to do, and thus, we do nothing. A lack of confidence coupled with inadequate training will deter would-be interveners. Whether or not you have enough time to intervene is also a factor. Let's listen to the following two scenarios read by Wendy here, who's helping out on this podcast today, and you can listen to hear what happens when indicators are noted, but the interveners don't respond to the signals.
Overwhelmed in the classroom. As a student teacher, Barbara felt overwhelmed by the responsibilities of managing classroom behaviors of seventh graders. She had enough trouble trying to organize her lesson plan. Therefore, when she overheard a group of boys in her class teasing one of the girls, she figured another, more seasoned teacher would take notice and know how to stop the behavior. Barbara's classroom supervisor, however, did not step in and take charge of the boys' behavior since she expected Barbara to do so or ask for assistance. The girl being teased finally became exasperated and ended up punching one of the boys in the nose. Passing the buck. It was 2:45 when Felicia looked at her watch at the emergency shelter for pregnant teens. Only 15 minutes more until she would be off duty. She knew there was tension between two of the young women who were sitting in the social room. If she could just keep things quiet till 3 o'clock, the responsibility would fall to someone else to take care of their conflict. Felicia scooted out of work at 3 o'clock sharp. When Judy, the second shift worker, came on to duty, she had to spend 2 hours de-escalating the conflict between the two women that Felicia had avoided.
Unfortunately, those two scenarios are all too common. For Barbara, as a student teacher, she was overwhelmed, and being overwhelmed fosters incompetence. She was also a bit underskilled, and when one is underskilled, it puts those who are in your care at risk. The same might be true of Felicia. Maybe she was unskilled and unable to manage that scene at the emergency shelter. Yet, she also put her self-interest ahead of others. She could have told someone, "I need help." Instead, she left it for her second shift worker, Judy, to come on duty and take that time to de-escalate a very growing volatile situation. We see over and over again the problems that arise when we overlook indicators, and yet we could take a simple step to merely feel, look, and listen. These are skills that we have in our tool bag today. It's something that we can do to start taking charge of conflict and leading it towards safety for all. I'm going to give you all a little bit of homework between now and the next episode when we get further into Chapter 2 and I get to talk about content. Content as an obstacle. What is content? It's the story. What's going on? And we'll find out how to move beyond that and really bring intervention towards safety for all. Meanwhile, your homework is to think about what are you feeling right now as you're reading this? Are you feeling empowered? Do you realize the strength that you have as a leader of chaos to move forward and start taking on the challenges in the world and not being overwhelmed? Look around the room and see and sense what you're feeling. That's a first step, is to hone your own skills and start making it be part of your daily habit to be aware. We don't have to be like ninjas walking down the street ready to jump out mere mention of something. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about basic awareness. You have it, you can do it, and you will move on. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Be kind, be safe, and follow your intuition. It's guiding you always. Ciao for now.